My yoke is easy and my burden is light, Jesus says. Well, what is Jesus' yoke? There it is. What is the burden that Jesus wants us to carry? There it is. Boil the entirety of the teaching of the Old Testament down into one statement. Boil the entirety of the teaching of the New Testament down into one statement, and there it is. Love God, love others. End of story. He gave not one commandment when they asked him, he gave two. Love the Lord your God with everything you've got, and love your neighbor as yourself. Love is not just a teaching for the crowd that day. It's also, of course, a teaching for us. Love is at the heart of what it means to be Christian. It's straightforward, it's simple, it's easy to remember, it's easy to understand. You can put it on a cute little bumper sticker. Love God, love others. You can't honestly claim not to know what God wants you to do. You can't honestly claim not to know what God expects of you, His disciple. It's easy. If the teaching is so easy, why is the living so difficult? If you can boil it all down to two sentences, why is it so difficult for us to live out? Christian living is simple, but it is not easy. The problem is not in our ability to understand. We understand quite well. The problem is in our ability to do. The problem is that love is hard work, and quite frankly, we don't want to do it. And since so often we don't want to live out what we already know of Jesus' teaching, we, just like the Pharisees and just like the Sadducees, start to ask questions. We want to qualify His commandment. What does love really mean anyway? Who is my neighbor after all? Jesus was asked the question, "Who is my neighbor?" And he answered with the parable of the Good Samaritan. The implication being, your neighbor is not the person who lives beside you. Your neighbor is anyone who needs you. Love your neighbor, he says. There is a man in need. Do I have to love him? There is someone who needs a friend. Is she my neighbor? There is somebody lacking social skills. Do I really need to reach out to that person? Here is someone who votes differently. Believes differently. Acts differently than I do. Do I really, really have to love that person? Here's someone who annoys me. Here's someone who's sick. Here's someone with AIDS. Here's my enemy. Do I have to love that person? I think sometimes that if I put half as much effort into loving as I do trying to find excuses not to love, if I were to follow the command instead of looking for reasons not to follow the command, God would be happier with me and I would be happier with myself. We know love because we have received it. We know the definition of love because God has defined it for us. Knowing what to do is not our problem. Doing what we're supposed to be doing is where we so often fall short. We don't need to receive more information. We know all we need to know. We need to share more love. We're proud of our Baptist way of doing things that makes us unique among other denominations. We're proud in this church of our interpretation of those historic Baptist principles that makes us different from the other Baptist churches in our community. But at the end of the day, we've got to put all of that into some kind of perspective. It's not that beliefs don't matter. It's not that theology doesn't matter. It's not that doctrine doesn't matter. But the fact is this: what we do will reveal what we believe, much more than what we say. The perennial question for us Christians is this: how many people can look at our lives and see that we are followers of Jesus Christ? Does our faith make any difference in the way we live? You're about to see a picture of a woman named Catherine Genovese. At 3:20 in the morning of March 13, 1964, Kitty, as her neighbors called her, was returning home from work, back to her apartment in the Queensboro of New York City. When she was just 35 yards away from her front door, a man attacked her with a knife. She was stalked, stabbed, sexually assaulted right in front of her building. She escaped twice, and he caught her again before she made it almost to the front door of her apartment, just 35 yards away. Lights went on. Neighbors came to their windows as her cries for help echoed through the alley. She broke free, but only twice. 38 of her neighbors came to their windows, looked over into the street, and witnessed this ordeal. No one intervened. Finally, after 45 minutes of this attack, one of her neighbors called the police, but it was too late for her. She had been killed. The media flocked to her apartment building and said, "Oh my goodness, this is evidence of no one in our society caring about anyone else anymore. We don't know each other. We don't care about each other anymore. We are wholly apathetic about one another." But that explanation that the media gave didn't make any sense to the psychologists and sociologists who were studying what happened here. They didn't buy the fact that 38 people living in this neighborhood were monsters. They didn't buy the fact that 38 people didn't care about their neighbor. They didn't buy the fact that 38 people could be that insensitive. There was an experiment performed, and the result revealed that because each witness to the attack could see that other lights were on, because each witness to the attack could see that other witnesses had also come to their windows, each witness assumed that someone else would make the call to the police. And because everyone assumed that someone else would do it, nobody did it. The researchers called the phenomena the bystander effect. It was not apathy or callousness or insensitivity that caused Kitty Genovese to be killed. It was a false assumption that somebody else would do something about it, and nobody did anything about it. They knew what to do. They just didn't do it. Knowledge was not their problem. Implementation of knowledge was the problem. They let Kitty Genovese, their neighbor, down.